The Department of Religious Studies at the University of Kansas is conducting a research project that seeks to preserve the history of various churches and other religious organizations in Kansas. We would like to record your memories of your experiences in religious organizations. We expect that each interview will take about 1 hour. We assure you that you are not obligated to participate or may discontinue your involvement at any time. Since we are trying to create a public record of Kansas religious history, we are primarily interviewing persons who agree to let their interviews be available to the general public through a website and to be identified by name as the person who was interviewed. Should you have questions about the project, please contact Professor Tim Miller at 785-864-7263 or tkansas@ku.edu. If you have any questions about your rights as a research participant, you may call the Human Subjects Protection Office at 785-864-7429 or email mdenning@ku.edu.
I consent.
I consent.
I consent.
In what churches or other religious organizations have you participated? Please provide names, location, and dates you were active.
My name is Kathy, and I grew up in the United Methodist Church in Littleton, Colorado. My family was members of I was baptized in Methodist Church in Brookings, South Dakota, and then when we moved to Denver, we joined the St. Andrew United Methodist Church in Littleton, Colorado. And my family was very active in the church. I sang in the kids' choir, and I went to Sunday school every week, and my mom was very active in all kinds of stuff, and I was in confirmation and was confirmed. And in the 1970s, can't tell you exactly when that was, but in the 1970s, and was very active in youth group. And then in college, I attended a Methodist service that was in the chapel at Colorado College.
My name is Janie, and I grew up in Elmwood, Kansas. I was a member of the United Church of Christ. I was involved in their choir. I was the student representative for the church council. I attended church weekly. I was confirmed there. My parents were very involved in the church, and my siblings were also. And then I was born in 59, and then I left for college in 79 to go to Colorado, and I moved around, and then I eventually came back to Kansas. And now I'm involved in the Methodist Church.
So you don't say Church of Resurrection. My name is Bonnie. I grew up in a very small town in South Dakota. And I've been a Methodist all my life. I went to the Garden City Methodist Church for my first 18 years. I sang in the choir. I taught Sunday school. Very small church, and it was just our community. The church was our community. Then after that, I've always been in the Methodist, been a member of the Methodist Church. I went to college and went to all the Methodist activities on the campus. We were married in 1953 in a Methodist church and did all the activities young people do in the church. We had a family and continue to be a member. We continue to be in Methodist church, and I was a Sunday school teacher. I was with the Ladies Society. I did it all. Still was a small church. Then we moved to Littleton, Colorado, and I am now a member of the St. Andrew. What happened? Yes, I am a member of St. Andrew Methodist Church in Littleton, but I also attend online Church of the Resurrection in Kansas City. Now what do I say?
Why were people attracted to this religious body?
Well, it's interesting because Church of the Resurrection is what's known as a mainstream, you know, Methodist church. So it's not like a new evangelical church, but it's so large that it's unusual in the Methodist church. And a lot of mainline religion and mainline churches are getting smaller and dying. But this one is growing dramatically, and it's a, you know, it's a giant church, and it attracts, I'm not sure how many members there are, maybe 20,000 now, something like that, which is a huge Methodist church. And I think people are attracted to Church of the Resurrection because, mainly because there's a lot of things to do. Like anybody, there are a lot of ways to fit in. I think, though, the church has an incredible leader and the senior minister, and he has an incredible way with people and an incredible presence in the pulpit. So I think a lot of people come to church just because of him and because of his message. But there's a very active youth program, very active adult education, lots of service projects. There's a lot of ways to get involved. But in the Methodist Church, which is having some issues around ordination of gay clergy, Church of the Resurrection has been very wide open and has really welcomed everybody. And that seems to be a message that's resonating. And I think that's why people are attracted to this religious body, that it's all are welcome, and it's very welcome of new people, maybe people who haven't been in church for a while, as well as, you know, longtime Methodists. But it has a sense of growth and spirit and lots of energy and activity and dynamism. And I think people are attracted to that. They want to go to a place of hope and energy and excitement. And I think that's probably a big part of why that church is growing.
I think people are very interested in our church, Church of the Resurrection, because the preacher, his sermons are very relevant to a person's daily life. They're very inspiring. He does a lot of research on topics that are important to the people that are going to church there. He is very open with gays and people of all different backgrounds and religions that choose to go there. He does a lot of surveys to get people's opinions on different things, and with over 20,000 people that go to church there, about 50% of them are Republican, and about 50% are Republican, 50% are Democrats. So he knows how to relate sermons to hit upon all the different groups. We have a lot of people that are married, people that are divorced, people that have a lot of hardships in life, people that are gay. And he has sermons that relate to people of all the different backgrounds, and very inspiring. And I think he keeps drawing in more people because he is much more open than a lot of the religions that have more of a conservative type of background.
I go to church online. Because I do not live close to the Church of Resurrection, I am attracted to this church because my son passed away very early age, and his ashes are in the memory garden. And I try to stay connected to that, to the church, just because it makes me close to him.
How did you come to be involved in it? Do you have a predisposition for a religious organization of this type, such as being raised by parents who were members? What other experiences influenced you to this religious choice?
Okay. I grew up as a member of the United Church of Christ, and we often, and the United Church of Christ is very similar to the Methodist Church. And so after I grew up, I went away to college, and I traveled around a little bit and came back to Kansas City. And I became a member of a church in Prairie Village. That was a type of United Church Christ Methodist Church. And then I got married in the late 1990s. And my husband and I were looking for a church that we could raise a family in. And we tried out different churches. And then we went to the Church of the Resurrection, and we were really impressed with the with the preacher there. And so the reason I got there is because it's so similar to the church that I grew up in. And I was just, I just think the preacher is so dynamic, and there's so many different ways you can get involved in the church. And I, as a place to raise a family, they went to Sunday school there, they got baptized there, they volunteered there. I just think it's a great organization to grow a family in.
How did your membership and participation affect your own private life outside of the religious group? In other words, was your behavior affected by the group ideals? How being a member changed you? If you've left the group, has it had an ongoing impact on your later life?
So I think the decision to be part of a church is a really, obviously, a very personal one, but also it depends on the kind of experiences you had growing up sometimes. And some people have very bad religious experiences and don't want to be in a church. I had a very positive experience in my church, and so I was more open, but my husband had not had a particularly good experience in his church, so looking for a place where you can go, where you can both feel comfortable and where you think it's going to be a place where you do more than just go and sit for an hour and torture yourself, and instead think of it as a place for an hour a week that gives you good perspective for the rest of your week. So I think we think of going to church as a time to, as my husband will say, spend an hour thinking about how to be a better person. And I think that what this church does is help you think about what you can do outside of that 1 hour of worship a week, how you can how you can put into practice what we probably say is what Jesus taught us, how Jesus taught us to live. So I would say being a member of that kind of a church helps change you every single day. You think about how to be a better person. And so I think my behavior is very much affected by that kind of weekly participation in a religious body. I also think it's, personally, it's about you being a better person, but it's also about you being with a group of people who are similarly trying to think about how to make this world a better place. And so I think being a member totally affects private life outside the religious group, both personally and communally.
I think that one of the questions that I get from a lot of people are, you know, is there really a God? Do you really believe that there is one? And I do believe there is a God, but I think whether a person believes there is a God or not, I think the fact that we have a hope that there is a God helps us to be better people and gives us hope in the future that there is a heaven and we will have a better life and we will see our loved ones. And I think that people become better people because they know that there is something else beyond here and now to strive for. So I think whether you believe or not, the fact that you believe helps people be a better person.
Did the group own real estate, own buildings? How were such holdings paid for?
Okay, I have it written down. Just a minute. The Church of the Resurrection just added on, and we did an $81 million addition to the Church of the Resurrection, which included a new 3,500-seat sanctuary. And the way it was paid for, it was... people contributed to a capital campaign a few years back, and it was based on donors and members of the church. And that maintained building the church for like a year or two, and then just recently we've had to take out a loan to pay for the additional amount of money. But really, most of the church was paid for based on the members and special donors. Part of the addition to Church Resurrection was a stained glass window that cost millions of dollars. And a lot of people bought different plaques of the stained glass window, and including my mother-in-law, my My husband passed away, and she donated a plaque of the window from my three girls in remembrance of Gary, and that was written on the window. And so a lot of people did that, and the stained glass window was paid for by members of the church, so that was not necessary to even have a loan for. So I think a lot of the church people felt the same way, and we had numerous people that stepped up to the plate.
How were members recruited, and what was the process of joining?
So I think the main way people are, it's not as much recruiting as much attraction. Like, people go and are really inspired by being part of it, and their kids like the youth program and like Sunday school, and the ministers, both pastoral care and preaching, are really good. And so I think it's more that people start talking, and it's more word of mouth rather than it is some kind of active recruiting.
Okay. And the way my husband and I had heard a lot about the church when we went, and we really were impressed with them. And what the preacher does is once a month, you have coffee with the pastor. And that is a time for people that are considering joining to meet with the pastor. They give you a handout, a booklet on what the church is about. He talks to you about, you know, what it's like to join the church, what the expectations are. And then if you do decide you want to join, then they set up you can pick the time that you want to become a member of the church, and you can, there's five different services that you can choose from. And then at that time, we went up to the front, and they named all of our names, and we became a member of the church. So it was through coffee with the preacher, and then a membership Sunday that they devote to people that want to become members.
Were there rules or agreements regarding dress or other matters of style?
No, there were no certain rules. The whole basis of the whole church was that anybody is welcome, and it doesn't matter what background you come from. It doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter what you wear. So there are no dress codes. There's five different services. There's some more casual. There's some more traditional, contemporary. You know, there's certain services you will see people dressed up more, and some that will see more casual, but there's no dress code. And you can, you know, the whole thing is he just wants people to come and feel welcome. It doesn't matter what someone looks like. So that's another thing I appreciate about our church, is that there is no expectations on your attire.
Because I go to Church of the Resurrection online, I'm at home watching on my computer and listening on my computer, and it's really nice to feel a part of it and be dressed however I am comfortable in. It's online church is good. It's good for me because I'm an older person, and it's hard to get out, and I feel a part of it. Thank you.
How were children handled? Was there an educational program for children? Were there other activities for children? Were there youth groups? Okay.
I had three kids. I had twins, and I also had another daughter. And when they were little, I was allowed to, well, people with kids could be in a soundproof room with their babies. And so you could watch the service. And if the kid cried or ran around, it did not disturb anyone, and the parent was still allowed to watch the service. However, if you did not, and that usually was with kids, maybe you were breastfeeding or they were infants, and you just wanted to go in a certain room, that was good. If not, then they had a nursery for little kids. And if during the service there was you had to check kids in and out, so they made it very safe. But during the service, if they needed to call you, they would make an announcement in church. If, for example, there was an emergency or a kid was crying a lot and they needed their mom, they could ask for the parent to leave the service. So they had a really good set routine. on how you could feel comfortable in the church, and the kids could be in a Sunday school room or in a nursery or a soundproof room. So they made it, and then they also had you know, for kids with disabilities, they also had Sunday school teachers, so that no matter, you know, who needed services, you were allowed to go to church, and you knew your kids were well taken care of.
Was there an educational program for adults apart from regular worship services?
Yes, that's one of the things. Because the church is so big, they wanted people to feel connected, and they had a lot of small groups, and they tried to meet everyone's needs. They had morning Bible studies. They had afternoon prayer meetings. They had evening small groups and programs. They had weekend fellowship events. And then they had service opportunities across the city and around the world. So there was numerous ways people could get involved to feel connected to the church.
What kinds of community service activities were undertaken?
Because it's such a large church, there are a lot of people who want to help and can help. And so the kids helped a lot with hunger ministry programs. They helped internally with the church nursery and Parents Night Out, so parents could do things. But also there's a large social outreach component, packing backpacks for schools, reaching out in homelessness, helping with food shelves. So it's one of the things that the church can do with a large membership is encourage really wide scale community service response.
As a mother of two high school students and a student who just started college, they were very involved in some of the ministries with the church. They helped with the hunger ministry. They would put together backpacks for all throughout the summer. Every week they would put together lunches for the homeless that were delivered downtown to Kansas City, Missouri. They helped in the church ministry during, church nursery on Saturday nights during the worship services. They did Parents Night Out, which was once a month, and they got involved with the kids so the parents could spend, it was for 4 hours, that the parents could go out at night and know their kids were well taken care of. They helped with backpacks, filling backpacks out for certain schools that the church was involved with.
What were treatment programs for drug or alcohol abuse or physical or mental abuse?
I believe that our church had programs for everything. Drug abuse, alcohol abuse, single parents, widowed parents, people that were going through cancer or grief counseling. I think that there was about anything that people were going through, they would have a group for them. And if they didn't have a group and people brought up that concern, the pastor would make sure a group was provided for them.
How do you see the future of the group over the long haul? Is the organization growing? Is it modernizing and changing? If it has closed, why did it close?
The Church of the Resurrection is definitely growing. It's the largest United Methodist Church in the United States. It has over 22,000 members. It started in a funeral home with less than 30 people, over 27 years ago, and now it's one of the largest, and it continues to grow every month. The number of people that are becoming members is increasing, and because he is so open with different types of ethnic, you know, whether it doesn't matter your gender, doesn't matter your ethnicity group, doesn't matter your income level, he's very open with anything, and because of that, the church keeps on growing and growing. It doesn't have the conservative, restrictive values that some of the churches have.
What were the best and worst things you remember about your experience?
Some of the things that I think were probably most important as far as Church of Resurrection, I think they made the membership, becoming a part of the membership and becoming a member very easy. I had three kids, and all my kids were baptized through the church, which was a positive experience. And then about 5 years ago, my husband passed away, and they had a care team that came to the house, and they had a chaplain that they sent to the house. They were very helpful in helping me out with the funeral arrangements and the service, and stayed in touch with me over the next year, making sure everything was okay. I think that they have a sense of keeping in touch and valuing you as a person and wanting the best for you.
So I think the best thing about my experience is dealing with the death of my brother and the minister who came and spent time with their family. I mean, with a big congregation, sometimes you don't maybe expect a lot of personal time, but she had a lot of time to spend with us and was very good in guiding our family through the good and the bad and telling stories and preparing for the funeral in a really holistic way that was all about a celebration as well as the sad and the not so sad. And then the church was, you know, they know how to operate. They handled all the arrangements really, really well. And so I think that was kind of the best. I think there wasn't really a worst experience, but I think part of it is that when you're in a big church, you have to work to be part of the organized life of the church. And so that's not really a worst thing, except it's just different than being part of a really tiny church where everybody knows each other. You've got to kind of work, and the church has to work hard to get people involved and not let people fall away. And that's just, in a big church, it's just a different scale of a problem.
What else can you tell us? Any anecdotes you can share?
You know, one that really stands out to me is one time when my girls, three of them, they were elementary age, and so they were younger, and and I work at a school with a variety of kids, and so I'm used to someone who has Tourette's syndrome, and during the service, which was on a Saturday night, there was a boy sitting kind of close to us, and he was in his early 20s, and during the sermon, he would just yell out, like, profanities. And my girls just looked at me, and I said, you know, I'm sure he has Tourette's. I said, you know, don't worry about that. You can't help it. And so it was probably a couple weeks later at one of the sermons, at one of the church services that I went to, Pastor Hamilton talked about, you know, the person in our choir, and he talked about, I mean, person in that goes to our church, and he said, you know, we do have a person here who yells out a lot of profanities, and he says, I'm really, you know, impressed with how well you guys at the congregation handle that. And he said, you know, he's a singer, and he's really, really good, and he came out and he sang, and he's in a band, and he sang wonderfully. And what it did for people is it brought an awareness out of Tourette's, and it brought an awareness out of, you know, his singing ability. And sometimes, you know, you just have to just don't judge people. And that was his message that he was sending, is that, you know, he tries to get to know all the people in the congregation, and, you know, he never judges, and he tries to educate people to help people fit in. So that's a memory that I have that I really remember.
So I'm not sure one anecdote. I have one anecdote, but many times when I'm sitting in church and I see this really big choir and a really accessible, focused worship, which is very important to our family because we have a son with disabilities, and so we watch for those kind of things. And it's very wheelchair friendly, but it's also it's accessible in a way that like people who've never been to church can, things are projected so they're not left out, and it doesn't feel like anybody needs to know the secret code. And so I guess anecdotally, as being in church with people who are sometimes like hardcore longtime Methodists, and then sometimes people who don't know anything about being in church, and everybody seems to kind of know what to do because it's very well guided. You see it in the bulletin, you see it projected, and you know exactly what to do. So I guess it's not one anecdote, but it's sort of an observation that that's what makes it accessible for a larger group of people who have varied backgrounds and varied interests and varied appreciation for structure or formality, and those who don't want formality. So it's kind of merges those all together.
What are the disadvantages of being involved in a large church?
I grew up in a town of 3,000 people. And my family was very involved in the church. You know, we were part of the choir, we were part of Sunday school, Bible study, church council, confirmation, Sunday services. And because it was a town of 3,000, and there were probably about five churches in the town, so our church probably had around, I don't know, under 100 members. And so you had to be involved, and you were just involved, and people knew who was involved and who wasn't. Well, now I'm involved in a church of over 20,000, and they do have small groups, and they really try to keep people involved, but I don't feel such a need to be involved because there's 20,000 other people who can do the job that like 80 people can do. So I feel like I'm not as involved, and I didn't get my kids as involved as I should have just because it is so large. So I think there's advantages and disadvantages of being involved in a small church, and advantages to being involved in a large church.
I started out in a quite a small church. Everybody knew everybody, and that's where my kids went to Sunday school. And it continued to grow, and there was no place for the building to grow. It was just no place for growth. So eventually, we had to give up that church and move south about 2 miles and build a whole new church. And in the process of going from that church to the big church, we lost a lot of members because they did not want to leave that building, and they felt the members there had built it from the ground up, and that was the church they loved. And it was in the park. It was a lovely setting. But if we were going to grow, we had to move because there was no place to expand. So that we did, and we lost a lot of members. In fact, I was one that really considered it. I've visited other churches, and I just couldn't quite give up my friends and all the activities that went with the church, so I moved with them. And I've grown to love the church, but it has really grown. And the members that we lost, they never came back. They were very upset about it. So, advantages and disadvantages. And now that the church has grown and many new members, we now operate like the Church of Resurrection. We have an online service. We do everything that Church of Resurrection does, except it's in a smaller number of people, but that's how it went.
Okay. How was the church founded?
Over 27 years ago, probably around 1990, Pastor Hamilton and his wife decided that they were gonna, they just had a vision on what they wanted in a church, and they started their church. They wanted to develop their own church, so they started in a funeral home, And they had, I don't know, maybe 30 people. They had some friends. They had some of their relatives. They had just their own family. And so they started in a funeral home, and, you know, word of mouth, it kind of spread. They added people, and then eventually they had enough people that they could start, you know, building a church. And then from there, it's expanded from maybe 30 people, and now they have over 20,000 people in their church. So I like the fact that, you know, they had to work hard. They started with, absolutely with nothing. They started with nothing. And they were able to make it into one of the largest churches in the United States.
One of the concerns we have in the future, what are your concerns about sustaining this church into the future?
So, interestingly, I think with Adam Hamilton, he's an extremely strong leader in, like any organization, religious or not, a strong leader is vital. And so he's in his 50s, and so eventually he'll want to retire, and it'll be up to somebody else to carry on the legacy of this church. And it's a large church. It's a large, large operation. We do have a really good donor base in this area of Kansas City, but it'll be really important to see how the church can build a sustainable succession plan for Adam Hamilton, because he's so much a part of the founding and the growth of the church. So it's a really important consideration going forward and an area of concern for the church.
What are some concerns about running a larger church?
I think this, well, definitely with a larger church, but with in churches in general, people, members that are giving money are feel more obligated to get the things that they want, and it doesn't always bring the best aspects out in them. I am a preacher's kid, so I have seen the both sides of it, and they can be very mean and cruel, and it doesn't always bring out the most Christian side of somebody. So I think that's a big challenge, is, you know, like, you should be donating money to the church because you're giving from your heart, and you're giving to something you believe in, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to be entitled to getting everything the way that you want it to be. So I think that that's a big issue in churches in general, but definitely in larger churches, because people who give more money feel that they are entitled to what they want for the church and how they want it to be, and if they don't get it, then there can be some backlash.
Do you know other persons we should interview?
Well, I think it'd be interesting to interview other ministers in mainline church, or members and ministers in mainline churches who would be able to comment on what it's like to have declining membership and declining giving, et cetera, versus mainline religions that are growing, because overall, mainline religions are having trouble. And so it'd be interesting to look at, like, what are the ones that are growing are doing, because there's a lot of focus on evangelical churches that are growing so much. But more in the line of mainline religion, what would be an interesting contrast is those churches, like Methodist churches that are really declining versus Methodist churches that are growing. What would be the big differences? And I think that'd be really interesting to look at.
What do you think the role of churches should be in social justice and political environments?
Oh, really good question, because clearly we live in a country where there's our Constitution calls for a separation of church and state. But I think that people of faith feel called to act upon their faith, and in this case, you know, Church of the Resurrection is clearly half Democratic, half Republican, but how can we come together on things that matter, and how can we develop policies that work for everybody. And I actually think it's a church that, because it's large enough and has enough diversity of political thought, that it could be, and is trying to be, a place that finds solutions in a very polarized world. A lot of churches are everybody thinks one way, either right side of things or left side of things. And I'm hoping that there are more churches like Church of the Resurrection, and we can serve as a place where people can come together and hear each other's opinions and realize we all have diversity of thought and we can find common ground. So in terms of separation of church and state, I think the church can be a place that can bring people together where the world of politics drives people apart, it seems like, these days.
I do believe, and Pastor Hamilton believes too, that there should be separation of school and state. I think if people want to do prayer in the schools, that's fine. If they have a time maybe before school that they all get together, I don't think any that should be mandatory. If, as he had spoken, if he moved to Utah and was in a mainly Mormon type community, would he want his kid to be a participant in the Mormon religion? Maybe that's something that should be brought up before school or after school. I don't think people should be forced upon a certain religion. I think we need to separate the two, and people can still do it. They just shouldn't do it on school time, and they shouldn't be forced to do it. So I do believe in separation of school and state. And another thing he believes in, which our church believes in, is evolution. I think there's a part that God plays, and I think there's a part that evolution plays. And I don't think that we should say it's all one or all the other.
Why do people go to church?
Oh my gosh, that is such a great question, because I think that is the quintessential question that's been driving a lot of religious organizations, including Church of the Resurrection. But why do people go to church? Like, you can stay home, you can go to your kid's soccer match, you can drink coffee, you can go out to brunch, you can do a million things now on Sunday. So why the heck go to church? And I think we're living in a world that's craving connection. I think we're living in a world that's craving meaning, that living all day long on Facebook and Instagram does not make people feel good or connected or real or authentic. And so going to church, you're with people who you think care about you and care about the world and are thinking beyond those kind of instant gratification methods. And I think there's a lot of indication that people are going back to church for the kind of communion it takes to change the world. So if we really want people to solve homelessness or solve hunger or solve political divide or whatever, I think there's probably more hope in people coming together on Sunday morning in a place that provides a safe and communal way to deal with these issues. So I think people are craving church in ways that are different than they did before, when they went to church, when it was perfunctory and everybody had to go to church, because if you didn't go to church, everybody in the community knew you weren't going to church. But in this case, I think people are choosing to go to church because it's a way to connect to the bigger world.
How will the church have a lasting impact?
You know, I think one of the things that will always connect me to the church forever and ever, and also my relatives and my kids to the church, is that when my husband passed away 5 years ago, we bought a vault in the Memorial Garden, and we put his ashes in there, and we have a place in the garden that we will always come back to visit. We will always remember our Gary. And also, when they built the new church, we all had the opportunity to go there as it was being built. And we all, the girls and I all went there, and we wrote something on the concrete floor before the church was built. So underneath it all, I mean, we put our names and we put the year and we wrote a message. And even though maybe no one ever will see that, we'll know that we were a part of the foundation of the new congregation that was being built. And so with the new foundation of the church and the memorial garden and the girls being baptized there and Gary and I becoming members there, I think that how we feel about the church will remain a part of us forever. So that church will always have a special place in our hearts and in the hearts of my girls.
If you have children, how did they change your experience? Did your children follow in your path?
You know, I think one of the most important things to me, I think it's always important to have God in your life and to go to church and especially to be a part of the community service and to help other people. And to, I mean, I feel like my girls have been given a lot, and I think they really need to give back to others. And so being a part of helping others is very, very important to me. And through the church, they've had that opportunity to be involved with, you know, being a part of visiting nursing homes, being a part of putting together backpacks, volunteering to be a part of the nursery service, being a part of the putting sack lunches together for the homeless. I just feel like when you've been given a lot in your life, you need to you need to give back to others. And I hope that I provide that for my girls to know that they need to give to others and that they pass that down to their kids.
Does your church focus intentionally on diversity?
That is a very good question. I think that I would say yes in terms of diversity of, you know, thought. We've talked about the, you know, political thought. But I would say the problem is that it still attracts really primarily this population around this area, which is pretty white. And so I think they've reached out to people with disabilities. But ethnically, I think we have a ways to go in attracting a very diverse population or helping, but part of the problem is our area isn't very diverse, and so people tend to attend church in their general geographic area, and so that's kind of a problem that if the area itself isn't ethnically diverse, it's going to be really hard. So I think that's what our church is facing, is we don't have that built-in diversity. So I think we're working on it, and I think we're talking about inclusion in terms of people with disabilities, but I would say we've got a ways to go in terms of ethnic diversity.
Why are some people turned off from religion?
I have a sister who currently is not going to church, but she is considering joining the Church of Resurrection. And the reason that she is so frustrated is because so many of these people who talk about going to church and are also so hypocritical and so they are not involved with helping other people. They think they're better than everyone else, but yet they belong to a church. And I think she is so tired of the hypocrisy of it all that she doesn't want to be a part of it. And since she has been talking to myself and my family and understanding how Church of Resurrection is so not like that and so much more accepting of people, that she is wanting to go with me to church and to become a member, because that's the type of church she wants to belong to. She wants to belong to a church that is accepting of all people and not the hypocrisy. And I think she sees a lot of that in the people that are more the conservative right. She has a really hard time with those who dog people of gays, people who are not I don't know, as conservative as they would like other people to be. So I like Pastor Hamilton and his church. I like the fact that he is so open to all different people, and I like the fact that she is willing to consider going and joining that church and becoming a member. And that's what we want. That's the whole focus of the Church of Resurrection, is to bring in all types of people and not have people that feel like they don't belong.
Do you think millennials are going to church?
I work at the welcome desk at my church, and there's a fair percentage of millennials going. It's mostly older people in my church, but the younger people that are going to church are really active in the church, which is exciting to see them come and be part of the church. But it's not very many, as according to the church population.
Okay. As the mother of two millennials who are not, who are finding their way back to church, I think Church of the Resurrection probably is doing it better, because they're offering a million different ways for people to be involved. And also, you know, what my sister-in-law said is relevancy is really important. Like, if these young people don't see the church being relevant, if they start preaching something about a billion years ago that has no relevancy to their life, they're not coming. But if they see something that's really relevant to them and makes sense and connects them to this world, I think millennials are going to be more church-going than we think they are, but not for the reasons that baby boomers like me went to church, like we have to go to church because our parents told us we have to go to church. But I think the millennials are saying we don't have to go to church, and we're going to go to church if it makes sense to us.
You know, right now I have twins that are seniors, and I have a daughter who is a college student. And right now, you know, I'm hoping I'm that giving them the values of the importance of church. And although I think lots of times when you go to college and you're caught up in the college world and you're busy and you're studying, that you don't always go to church, but you hope that you instill a value in them that once they get out of college and they establish their lives and their families, that they will come back around and believe in the same values you do. So even though they might take a time out in the meantime, I think, you know, that's okay. I think a lot of kids do that. But what you want is that you want them to come back, and you want them to, you know, when they establish their family, to have the same values that you do. So I feel like that I'm accomplishing that.
I want to end by thanking all the interviewees for sharing their time and insights and their personal reflections on their churches and the importance of religion in their lives. Amen. Thank you.